Welcome to Obuleti Oromo Women's Network monthly webinar and podcast. Our conversations are based on topics and issues that are prevalent in the Oromo community, especially pertaining to women. The podcasts are based on recorded monthly webinars led by leaders in our community. These podcasts are meant to attend to the education component of Obuleti's mission. If you're interested in learning more, please contact us via our website, email, and or social media networks. Webinar resources can be found on our website at obuleti.org/webinars.
Johara, is from Minnesota. I met her a few years ago when I was living in Minnesota. She has been I think one of the individuals that I've met who continue to make an impact within our community, especially in the mental health arena. Considering talking about mental health is a big taboo in our community, I think she's doing a great justice for us.
Hi, everybody. And I'll just start with the name of God. Bismillah, tawakkalna ala Allah, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala Sayyidina Muhammad. So my name is Johara, and I reside here in Minnesota, as Hawi said, and I studied marriage and family therapy, and so I am a practitioner now, working with adults and kids. I do group therapy for mentally challenged kids. And then I see adults, individual, couples, and families. And I have worked in school, and I worked with students also in school. Now I work at the mental health facility. So, yeah, and I my topic today is trauma in Oromo women. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that can be shared, how our Oromo women have been affected. But first, let me go ahead and define what trauma is. So Wikipedia defines trauma as psychological trauma is damage to the mind that occurs as a result of a distressing event. Trauma is often the result of an overwhelming amount of stress that exceeds one's ability to cope or integrate the emotions involved with that experience. So traumatic events include physical, psychological, and sexual abuse, terrorism, and war, which has happened in our country many times, domestic violence, witnessing violence against others, and accidents and natural disasters. They can result in serious stress and detrimental consequences for survivors and their families. Research indicates approximately 50% of all individuals will be exposed to at least one traumatic event in their lifetime. Unfortunately, our Oromo people have experienced historical trauma in general and women in particular. So some survivors will have, like, over time, the trauma will be absorbed over time, and for some will experience long-lasting problem. According to research, again, approximately 8% of survivors will develop post-traumatic stress disorder. if I have to say a little bit about post-traumatic distress disorder and the risk. So usually, you know, people of combat, we think only PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder will affect only people who are soldiers who have gone to war. But it is, you know, it can affect people in many ways. People of sexual assault, surviving a natural disaster or an attack, of traumatic psychological events that can cause PTSD. These severely traumatic events often have a direct physical impact on a person's safety. Okay, veterans who have been injured in combat are at high risk for PTSD because they have sustained a direct injury in a violent setting. But, you know, here I can say our Oromo women have experienced this, being either in, you know, especially what is happening nowadays, like their kids are protesting and then they see their own kids being killed or their loved ones being killed in front of them. So it is not less than the veterans or people who are on the front line. Most of the time, our women have been affected because they are mothers, they are wives. So their husbands have been attacked, their children have been taken by police, and they have been put in prison. They themselves, the women, have been arrested and imprisoned. So, and they are survivors of rape also. So survivors of rape have experienced physical and emotional trauma, which is associated with very high rates of post-traumatic response. These events can be a single occurrence in a person's lifetime or occur repeatedly, such as ongoing physical abuse or an extended or repeated tour of duty in a war zone. The severity of traumatic events and duration of exposure are critical risk factors for the risk of developing PTSD. So just to tell you a little story about myself, I was in high school. I don't know, maybe most of you who are listening, you might be very young or maybe have not been born, I don't know. It was in 1974 or 75. During the Derg era, the Derg regime, the military government. So as many students, I have been sent to national service that I have to go and serve the people. Me and my group were the luckiest people. Most of the people will go out of their provinces. So I was born in Dredawa, and luckily this missionary man who used to teach another school, like only for boys at that time, and I used to attend another school which is mixed. So he has taken these two students from these two schools, and we worked under him. And what we did was, it was a kind of week program here that we give to kids, where we give milk and, you know, grains and you know, all this stuff. So we were doing that, and most of the boys who participated in that program has built roads from the Redawa to the neighboring countryside. So one day, a terrible thing happened. I was with these two girls, as usual, a normal day, a beautiful sunny day. So we had a car that this a driver, usually they take us from our homes, and he drops us where we do the work. And as we were working, it was close to the airport, you know, it is far from my house. And as we were giving this, to the mothers will bring the kids, we will weigh them and measure their heads and give them powder milk and some grains, oil. So they take that and go. We do that every morning. And sometimes we go to the neighboring countryside and we do the same. So as we were working, we hear this big noise, which is very frightening. And we didn't know where it was coming from. And we were confused. So as we were just looking at each other, we see our driver running and coming, and he said, it is not safe. You have to leave immediately. Come, come. And so we just sent the mothers who came to collect the food, and we left. So what we learned was a missile was being thrown from around the airport to the city. So we didn't know whether it was safe even to leave that place and go to our own homes. And this driver had to drop three young girls at the time. So when I went home, my family, I see them in shock, and everybody was in the city just running around. They didn't know what to do. And we hear this big noise. And I don't know if some of you know, Dredawa is surrounded by a hill. And the hill is not far from my house. So it was one that missile has fallen on that hill, and one has just crushed the mosque, which is just maybe about two blocks from my house. So luckily, I was safe, and I went there. So can you imagine just the terror in the city and, you know, everybody just not knowing what was going on. And these people who the attackers are, you know, as you maybe you might have heard about how Somalia and Ethiopia always had this conflict. So I think it was Ziad Barre's regime, and they had problem with Mengistu. So they, these are the soldiers who were close to the airport. They almost, you know, took over the airport. But luckily, they were caught, and that, you know, the missile has stopped, and we were safe. But, you know, that has affected me for many years. I was feeling anxious, but I didn't know what was going on with me. It was like just I feel afraid. When any noise comes, you know, it just, it's like flashback. It reminds me of this big noise that has happened that day. So how much more? This is just a simple thing that happened for one time for me. It could be, you know, there could be other things that has happened, but there are others who have experienced more than this. I mean, there are worse things that happen to young girls like me at that time. So people, because there was no rest, started escaping. And, you know, when they were going from Ethiopia, crossing the border, going to Djibouti, Somalia, or Kenya, they have been, most of them have been raped. Most have, you know, I don't know if there are girls, maybe some boys have lost their life because their food was, because they have to walk in the hot desert area, and they didn't have water. And so so many things has happened. So women especially have suffered, especially the Oromo women. You know, it is historical, like what has happened is not one-time thing. So it continues even today. Now, when we see the protesters being killed, these are, you know, this person who has been killed has a mother, that is Oromo woman, who is suffering and crying. So these people who have been, you know, crossing the border, who have been raped, has never talked about it. Because, as you know, it is a taboo and shame talking about what has happened to you as a woman. And I doubt it if they have even sought help. And so from there, many Oromo women have migrated. And the migration, you know, sometimes women, because they are in danger, they have to leave their kids behind and leave the country. Or sometimes they will take their kids and go. And they face so many horrible things happening to them. So here, after I have I started working with people, I did work as an interpreter also, and I have interpreted for women and girls who have gone through trauma, and I have counseled many of them who have gone through trauma. So from, you know, who have experienced maybe car accident, domestic violence, sexual assault, rape, and so it is very painful to listen to their stories. These are brave women who sought help and talked about their experiences. So when, after they immigrated, so, you know, before they leave their country, most of the time, I don't know about other area, in the Redewa area, women, only few women work. Even if they work, they maybe it is just a simple kind of work, not because they didn't go to school. And so economically, they are okay, they are working, the husband will be working. But imagine when they leave their country, so the disruption of social support, roles of network, and trauma that has happened to them while going, you know, trying to save their lives. And some of the Oromo women have been involved in politics, and they were committed to the cause. So they have faced many, you know, scary things that has happened to them in the country, being imprisoned, or, you know, or tortured. So when women migrated, sometimes alone or with their children, so the route might be very, very difficult. They have to walk for a certain distance. Maybe they will be, and I hear stories about people, when they go to Kenya, people will be put on a big truck with animals, you know. And that is the most scary thing and very, like, unsafe. And they have just to cross that border. And then they will be exposed to harsh living conditions in refugee camps. People are just fighting because of the food or because they are from different ethnic groups. They started fighting there, and it was not safe. So exposure to violence and disruption of family and community, and an uncertainty about outcome of migration. So they have to wait and wait many years in that scary place, and where the nutrition, especially for some kids, are very harsh. So again, if I would like to share a little bit about my aunt, may Allah rest her soul in Jannah. She is my aunt, and she is like a father and mother to me, because I lost my dad at a young age. So she took over and she helped the whole family. And when everybody, you know, has escaped, so from my family also, some of us have escaped. And she was imprisoned because they said, you are the one who helped those people who have, you know, those young girls and boys who have escaped. So she has to suffer. And my aunt is a very strong woman and businesswoman who is wise. So she wasn't the same after that. You know, trauma can traumatize people, become stuck in horror they endure. Traumatic memories dominate the life of many survivors. They continue to live in fear and feel tormented even when the threat is no longer, when even the threat is long gone. So my aunt, who was strong that I have ever seen, maybe she has become one of these who started being afraid. And so I have worked in the study that has been conducted at the University of Minnesota, a population-based survey of torture and violence in Oromo and Somali community. I worked as community coordinator for that pilot study, and I interviewed more than 250 Oromo women. I was shocked to hear their stories. Most of them were tortured, imprisoned, witnessed their loved ones killed in front of them, raped, their houses were searched, called to police station to be questioned. And one individual, it is still, you know, when I close my eyes and remember that scene, you know, what she has told me, it scares me. It has actually, you know, traumatized me. And this woman told me that during the Derg era, the soldiers or, you know, the police were chasing many Oromo people. So people were trying to run from these people, from the soldiers. And she said, we came to a body of water. I don't know if it is a lake or a pond or something, but she said there was crocodile in it. And people said, instead of being killed by a gun of these soldiers, I'd rather be eaten by the crocodile. And they started jumping into that body of water one by one. And I can't imagine, you know, how, look at the bravery. They said, we are not going to be killed by the enemy. It's rather to die this way. They felt that is dignified, maybe, even though it is very horrifying scene, you know, to talk about and to hear women talking about this. So I think some of you might remember the Red Terror during Mengistu era. I don't know if you remember, maybe if your parents have told you or other listeners maybe who are older might remember. So Oromo women have suffered during that time. They have witnessed their children being killed in front of them. Some mothers, you know, in the morning when they were just trying to go out and, you know, go to get food or something, they open their door and they find their own son or daughter, dead body in front of her door as she was coming out of her house. Can you imagine the life of this mother after just seeing her own son or daughter lying there and, you know, dead. I don't understand how human beings can do such things to another human being. So many of the people, if you have heard of the story, have been refused to bury their own dead. So either they will leave them there, and in some parts of our country, the hyena will eat the body, and in some places, they will just leave them there in the sun, which is very terrifying. And on top of that, the mothers were not allowed even to mourn, to cry. So they have to hide maybe at night, and they have to cry about this. And so holding all these things, when women migrate and go to another country, so they don't know how to even seek help. They are carrying all these things and moving, you know, around, trying to find job, trying to learn the language wherever they go, and trying to just establish life again. So the first thing what they are thinking about is safety. And when they are safe, at least there is no, they don't worry in the morning that they will see a dead body, or somebody will just pull them from their house to be questioned or in prison. So they try just to survive and be there for their children. And, you know, I think in 1977, I was in Printini. Every night I used to hear women cry and screaming for help. Nobody can help them. They were just screaming. And the cry meant in those days their children either have been taken away from them or have been shot in front of them. So can you imagine the trauma that our Oromo women have experienced at that time? So again, I heard a story, most of the youth have to join the fight when there was fight also between Eritrea and Ethiopia. And these youth, they were not even trained. They would just take them in the front line and they die for nothing. And, you know, fighting for their country is bravery, but, you know, when people just want to get rid of you and put you in on the front line, that is very painful to lose a young soul. So this, the mothers of, or in general, Oromo women, or I don't know if there are other ethnic groups also, they were forced to prepare food like, bacho from barley. So they have to clean the barley, roast it, pound it, and then take it to the mill. This will be the food for the soldiers. So, you know, these women have lost their kids, have lost their husbands, have, you know, so many things has happened to them. On top of that, they have to serve, you know, doing all these things. And research indicates that women are twice as likely to develop PTSD, experience a longer duration of post-traumatic symptoms, and display more sensitive to stimuli that remind them of the trauma. And when I have interviewed many women, as I said earlier, I see them, they are in pain because they shed tears. When they talk about it, I can see fear in their eyes. But nobody has ever sought help, even though I offered, because we are working with psychiatrists and nurses and doctors, and I always told them, if you need help, there are people who can help you. And they say, no, we are okay. We are okay. But, you know, women in general, you know, not only Oromo women, they try to be strong for their children. And especially in this country, if they become, if they show their, you know, being sick or something, some of them have told me they are afraid. Maybe the system might take the children because they think I'm not fit, so I have to be strong for my children, which is in contrary. It is, if the mother is stronger, then the kids will be, you know, safe and healthier too. But yeah, sometimes I don't know if it is resiliency, and I believe in Oromo women being strong, but it is hard. I hope they will realize that, you know, seeking help is no shame, and they will hopefully be treated from what they are experiencing. And untreated post-traumatic symptoms not only have tremendous mental health implications, but can also lead to adverse effects on physical health. Female survivors may encounter physical symptoms including headaches, gastrointestinal problems, and sexual dysfunction. So many people, when they are traumatized and they are, you know, they carry the pain in different areas. Some people carry it on their shoulders. Some have back problem. All that is the symptom of, you know, being affected by the trauma. So there are a variety of effective treatment interventions for women who have survived traumatic events, including cognitive behavioral therapy, group treatment, pharmacotherapy, and psychodynamic intervention. And there are others also, like EMDR, that is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So these are also all are helpful. Some people in this country, they have service dogs, which are becoming increasingly common. And so for some people, medication also might help if it is, you know, if they can't, you know, if the therapy or group therapy or individual therapy is not helping them, sometimes medication also will help. And, you know, the other day I was listening to this sheikh, which gave me a little hope. Hopefully, listening to, most of the time people will think a sheikh might not be traumatized or a sheikh cannot have these kind of things, because people will make you feel like you are weak and your faith or iman is not strong. So because some people will tell others that they are weak in faith. But this sheikh in public, he said he was traumatized in Mecca when he was doing Hajj. In Mecca and Mina, there was some years back, there was a stampede, you know, when people were trying to just walk. If one person falls, so many people will fall, and the others will just step on these people and walk, and many people have lost their life like that. So this sheikh has witnessed that, and he has seen people from the heat becoming weaker, that he couldn't help, and he became traumatized, and he didn't go to Hajj for many years. So this year he went for Umrah and actually talked about it, how he was traumatized and how he is helping himself, becoming, you know, talking about it. And then he actually suggested that getting help is okay, because our Prophet also told us, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that, you know, as the disease is created, medicine also have been created for that. So we have to seek help. Seeking help is not shame. It is not taboo. So I hope our people will learn and try to, you know, help themselves. I think I have covered, I think, most of the things. So our African, you know, descent, or even the Oromo, if I take in particular, they follow the wisdom of their ancestors, culture, knowledge of healing, power, spirituality, wholeness, and community. So we need to go back to that, and maybe herbal and going to sheikh or priest, are these are specialists in therapeutic endeavors. You know, if there is any question, I can take some question now.
Johara, yeah. Thank you for your briefing and actually very horrifying history. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the time was that you are speaking about, I was there in that country. Mm-hmm. I was though teenage, but mm-hmm. I have seen a lot. I was in Pimpini that time. Mm-hmm. So I know my aunt even didn't get a chance to cry mm-hmm. all. Okay. And it was too difficult to get her 17 years old or 16 years old son easily to bury him. So there is there was a lot of things that happened, but but today, I think even today can be worse, mm-hmm. because that time, yes, it was a bullet there, you know, they just kill anyone that they think that they are not in favor of them. But yes, for our women, it is too tough, a lot of things, the culture and so on, and then all these horrifying things, war. But how could they proceed? Did they tell to their children about what had happened? Is there, I'm just wondering if they speak out with their own, you know, families, because we are a bit very open, I think. I don't know. I am in the family I have raised, so you have to say what you feel. Then you can get a medicine or whatever it is.
You mean treatment or?
Yeah, I mean treatment, not treatment, but I think to talk out in what this speaking out or saying it, you know, just specifically instead of medicine, it is, of course, it's very, better if they get a chance to talk out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if there is any chance for them. If they did it, if they say to their children, if they have, you know, of course they came to you and talk to you, yeah, because of this, your studies. But have they spoke out with the family? Or is it a taboo too?
The people that I have interviewed, you mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Those people, I'm sure they have talked with their families, but most of the time, see, when trauma happens, if people start talking about it, for some people it is very helpful with the professional, because they know how to help them to cope and what to do at that time. But with their family, maybe they might be traumatized more when they talk about it because they don't know how to handle that. But I'm sure some of them might have talked among themselves. I didn't ask the question. I'm just thinking that they might have done that. And recently I heard that, there was a treatment center was opened in Tigray or something. And we need that in other parts of Oromia, because our Oromo people have gone through this trauma from 19th century till today, and which is worse today, that you think we are, there is peace, and then at the same time people being killed every day. That is very painful. And, Asma, I'm so sorry that your aunt has to go through that. And then she has to not being able to bury her children or her son. I'm really sorry. And I know a woman in my town who has only two sons. Both are youth, like maybe 15, 16. They were killed because, different groups, IHAPA and Miezon and, the Derg supporters and all these, they just, even two brothers became enemy at that time, as if you recall. So these two brothers were killed, and that woman has become insane. How can she, grasp that, And it is so difficult to see your own children that you brought up, and you think, okay, today he will finish college, he will work, get married, and I will see their grandchildren, that all that has been cut, short. And there are young girls who participated in this, with groups, and then the government has to kill them. And I know so many people that we have gone to high school together, and it is very painful, very painful. Thank you for sharing your story.
Beef 2, do you have a question?
I think what I want to say is thank you, Johara, for your talk. It was really beautiful and meaningful. And although I didn't personally experience any of this, I know from my parents, mom and dad, that they did. And a lot of the stories that you shared are similar to what they have shared with me. I guess what I want to know is there kind of like more traditional like mechanisms or like something within Oromo culture that we can revive that can help us collectively like deal with the trauma? And maybe a second question is, do you think that the youth, Oromo youth right now, there's kind of like a mental health crisis, I believe. Do you think that is connected to what their parents have gone through?
The traditional way of healing, I really haven't, there is no structured thing, but usually people will come together and they pray together and they just share their experiences, they talk about it. I wish we can create that for the community, because it is very helpful to be in a group, and when everybody shares their their experience, people will feel, oh, okay, it was not only me, so I'm not alone, and they will relate. and they can learn the strength, how the other people have dealt with it, with each other. So this can be, you know, yeah, I haven't seen any of our community who are doing this. So this is a good idea that we need to create that for our people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the youth, they have gone through a lot, you know. Either they heard the story, like you were saying, from their parents, what has happened, and they were just, you know, keeping it inside and they didn't talk about it. And then if they come from our country while they were young and they are exposed to so many things, and there is peer pressure, and, you know, there is drug problem, alcohol problem. So when they go through that also, it will be like dual symptoms that is seen. So it is scary. You know, we need to do something as a community for these youth who are suffering and who are, they don't seek help at all, you know. And our people don't believe in mental health. That is the problem. You know, anybody can have, you know, they can suffer from mental problem. Even a woman who have gone through childbirth can be traumatized, and she can have maybe postpartum depression. And so all this is treatable. That is the problem, because in our country, if someone shows this kind of sign, they just say, oh, namnisam marata, they are crazy. So that is the name. So they don't think it is a normal thing that can happen to anybody, and that there is help, and it is treatable. It is common, and it is treatable. So we need to educate our community about that.
I joined you guys late, so I think I missed out on a lot. But yes, you know, mental health is a huge topic in our community. And unfortunately, we don't even have the language, you know, to talk about it. And, you know, I think also as a person that was raised in a Muslim environment, what I witnessed a lot is when somebody does get in the extreme end of, you know, mental health symptoms and hallucinations and other things start, we quickly run to religious, you know, methods of treatment before we would consider going to a medical doctor or a psychologist. So I guess my question is, especially when it comes to women, you know, there's a lack of space to talk about this. And we have a lot of women's afushas, and is there a way to introduce this dialogue into those spaces? Another is, yes, as a community, we have suffered a lot of trauma, we've survived a lot of trauma, but also as women, you know, I'm sure many of us here and in our community can say that many of us were born to teenage mothers, which means there's child marriage involved. A majority of our women are survivors of, you know, circumcision, which has its own set of trauma. You know, domestic violence is huge. So women in particular carry so much, and it's so normalized that perseverance and, you know, survival is where you're judged for your strength, you know. So how do we normalize this? How do we really bring, you know, the things that we've experienced out of the shadow and put language to it? Because I grew up in the U.S. I don't have the words for it in Oromo, and that's a reflection of the fact that we don't talk about it, you know. So as a professional that deals with mental health, how is there an advice that you could give the rest of us who are open to talking about this in introducing these dialogues into the circles that we're in or foshas that we're in. If you have any suggestions, please throw them my way.
Okay. Well, where do you live?
I live in North Carolina, but I run actually several groups in Atlanta, Georgia. And I have a women's group also in Seattle and in Portland, Oregon. I run a women's retreat in North Carolina that focuses on activists and human rights defenders that work internationally. And I've worked with the rest of the world for many years, but I just don't know how to do it with my own people.
Right. It is hard. Our people, it is taboo to talk about mental health. But maybe, I don't know, if you have a focha of Oromo women, maybe slowly they have to trust each other first. The trust is the big thing, to talk about your personal thing, or even just mentioning about that. So, and if there is, when you are in Carolina or somewhere like, you know, Seattle, wherever you are you traveling all over to do these groups?
Yes, I travel, yeah.
Okay, so, but in North Carolina, you have a focha and you live there, right?
Yeah, and in North Carolina, what we do is we run the retreat where we fly people in here, you know. So actually, for the first time, I invited two Oromo women who came, and it was 15 women from all over the world, and the two Oromo women. And what you just said about trust is so important, because after spending 3 days together, and everybody else was talking, and the three of us that were Oromo weren't really opening up like everybody else. And within 3 days, it was amazing to see, you know, all of us opening up, but it was because it was amongst strangers that don't speak our language and then don't go back to our community, you know?
Right, yeah. You know, people are scared. They think if they talk about, for example, rape is very, like, scary thing. It is shaming to talk about it, but there is nothing shame. That is not a woman's fault, you know. She Absolutely. Has been, you know, people have attacked her and they did this to her, so it is okay to talk about it. That is how people heal. But it is hard for women, whether she is an Oromo or American, it is hard unless she has a safe place to do it. And if So you have, now you are three. Maybe there are other Oromo women, slowly the other two, if they have friends, if they know somebody, you just try to make like a focha. You bring people together and slowly open up. And first you have to trust, everybody has to trust each other. And maybe you just raise these questions saying, you know, how can we heal from this? This has happened in our country. Maybe we were young. It has happened to our mothers. And now also it is, you know, happening. Our youth are dying every day. And so how can we talk about these difficult things? Maybe somebody will start, you know, the moment one person opens his or her mouth, then the rest will join, because they have stories to tell. Everybody has something to tell. And that is how it starts. I hope that is helpful. I don't know.
No, absolutely. And what you brought up is a very interesting topic there with rape. What opened up one of the young women was understanding marital rape and what that meant. And she suddenly realized that, you know, that's the situation that she's in, you know? So again, the normalization of different situation and different things that happen to us is part of what makes us not recognize trauma. And just because we don't recognize it, it doesn't mean we're not traumatized, you know? So yes, absolutely.
Yeah, people are walking, traumatized people are walking, and they live among us, but they don't talk about it. They don't say anything, but they are suffering inside.
Yeah. Somebody said for Oromos, it's not PTSD. It's not post. It's continually. We're living it, you know. when we go to the store and some, you know, an Amhara person talks to you and you say, I'm Oromo, you're triggered in a moment, you know? Thank you for this time. Thank you.
Sure. And, you know, I said earlier, maybe you didn't join, it is historical trauma. It is, you know, generational trauma that has happened to our Oromo people. It didn't start now. So that is why it has become like, you know, as though you get used to something, that is what happened, but it triggers them when something happened like that you just mentioned, yeah.
There's a book called It Didn't Start With You. It's a great book. It talks about generational trauma. So if any one of you is interested, you know, that's a great book that just kind of spells it out. It Didn't Start With You.
Didn't start with you. Okay. Yeah, reading a lot about that is very good, you know.
This is Hawi Jahara. I also will echo what everybody said and say thank you. But my question is about, so I guess in talking about like rape and how normalized it is and how much shame we feel, especially in the Oromo community talking about it, I've come to this realization that especially among certain groups, like rape is like part of our culture, right? Like buta, as RC people say, it is a way of taking the girl and her not returning back to the family because it is expected that she has at this point lost her virginity. So those types of things are kind of conflicting in terms of like, how do I talk about this? Because it's so normal within my culture, like it happened at least, you know, for my own parents or for my grandparents, like that was something that was normal. And to say now, like, no, that shouldn't have happened to you, it kind of goes against our culture. So I don't really know, as me myself, as a mental health professional, how to have that dialogue, right? How to say, actually, that was not the appropriate way that it should have went, but also respecting like our ada. I'm not entirely sure if how to go about that. And then my second question is regarding, I guess, you know, we don't recognize the influence of like social media and images on the traumatic process. So like, you know, during like protests, when people get killed or people get hurt, you know, we post all of that content on Facebook, mostly Facebook, I guess, whatever forms of media we have access to, it's kind of readily available to all of us, right? Even those of us that are not experiencing it firsthand, we're getting kind of that firsthand experience of the trauma because we see it online. And it almost becomes, you know, for me, especially like when I'm looking on Facebook, I just want to, you know, keep scrolling because it's become so normalized to see my people dying, my people getting killed, my people being assaulted or insulted with words, with different ways, I guess. So maybe you can speak to that a little bit too, like the traumatization process and the impact of images on our minds and on our bodies.
Yeah, you know, the first question about Buddha, you know, that is common in our Oromo in all areas, I think. But it has become less and less now in other parts. I don't know about RC. And it is not a right way of getting married, you know. Religiously also, you know, from Islamic perspective, our Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, if a woman has to agree to the marriage, leave alone just, you know, taking her away from, you know, like kidnapping. This is like kidnapping the woman. And then how can a woman be a wife for that man who didn't, who hasn't given her, you know, that respect and then you know, but this is ADA, as you said, it is culture, and it is hard to speak against that, but we have to educate our elders that this is not the right. I don't know how to talk to elders because it is their culture and they think it is normal. They think that is one way of getting married. But against their will, a woman, you know, it has never has to happen to her like that. And, you know, my aunt, again, if I talk about her, my grandfather has married her to this man who didn't agree to it. And she, I don't think, you know, when they took her by force, she went, that night she started fighting that man. And then maybe, I don't know in how many days, I don't remember, she has to flee and go to Djibouti, and she didn't come back to our country, you know, for many, many years. So that happens to people, you know, when they are forced against their will. And so that needs a lot of education. And the social media, as you said, we started becoming used to seeing people being killed and we have become numb, you know. It is very irritating, very, sometimes if I look at that image, I start shaking, you know, because this is your blood, this is your people getting hurt. And, you know, I hear a lot of seniors, they are at home, they started using this media, whether it is on TV or some person will open the computer for them and they see this. And this woman the other day, my niece was telling me, she's diabetic and she started having, you know, her diabetes has shot up and blood pressure, and she has become very sick because she was watching this. She is an Oromo. She is a mother. She is, you know, she has experienced during the Derg. She was there in that area, especially around Awadai and all this area where big things has happened. So now she is becoming ill. So it affects people in different way. So especially our seniors who are at home and watching this, they will get, you know, physically ill. You know, I remember when I was interpreting at the Center for Victims of Torture, at that time also, you know, after, you know, during the Mullah's era, people have been put in prison, things will happen. And when they hear about the news, they come in the morning, the next day for treatment, and they talk about that. So the therapist used to tell them, you have to minimize listening to these scary, you know, stories, and you have to minimize watching it because it will affect your mental and physical health. So it is very hard, you know. People just want to, you know, follow the what is going on, which is okay in one part, but it is not okay also if it is affecting the health of the person. Yeah, I don't know if I have answered your question, Hawi.
No, that was great. Thank you.
No, Hawi, thank you so much. This is absolutely amazing. Next time, I really want to hear this in Oromo because it's part of my training. Because again, it's hard to find the language to even start talking about it. And that makes it impossible, let alone talking to the public, talking just within families, you know. And, you know, one thing that is hard about being Oromo is the people that end up destroying us and our mental health and like the silent killers of us is ourselves, the way we gossip and talk about each other. You know, we have a huge drug problem in our community right now, and these people have nobody to turn to, you know. And we're not supportive of each other. We don't have, especially us, the diaspora community, we're not good at supporting each other. So just, you know, and this is not even a question, but more an advice for all of us here, is to just look around ourselves and just, you know, be open to listening, to be able to ask somebody if they're okay, you know. And it's hard to do, I know, but we're suffering in silence in so many ways. And unless we speak up for each other, you know, there's no way that we're going to get to, you know, resolving this. And, you know, we've been so preoccupied with Bilisuma. It has been like the number one thing for all of us, you know, for our entire existence. And especially in the West, where day-to-day survival is not the same as what it used to be back home or what it is back home for others. It's easy to get sidetracked. So just, you know, to say, let's go back and look around our homes, look at each other, our friends, and maybe if we can start there, next time we can sign into this webinar and there will be, you know, 14 of us, 20 of us, and 50 of us as, you know, it grows. So keep doing this. This is awesome. I'm sorry I haven't come to the ones before, but I'm happy that I was able to catch a little bit of this.
Yeah, this is a really very good idea, Naima. If you start with whatever, I mean, number, whether it is 2, 3, as you said, it will grow. So once these people trust each other, come together, start opening up, the rest will join. So, yeah, I mean, from all of us in our area, start just having a small group and then maybe coming to webinar together and everybody sharing their, you know, their experiences, you know. And when I participated in that study, and then the next one, what we did was we invited some of the women and we did like a group where they learned also about how to care for themselves. It is health realization, they call it. And when we were doing that, you know, it was so beautiful. Everybody was sharing what they have experienced, and they opened that up. Even the quietest person also joined, because it just, you know, one person has to start. And, you know, when we did the interview, it was individual, just me and that person in the room interviewing them. But when we did this group together, we have seen stories coming out, everybody sharing how they are suffering. Some of them, they say in the morning when they wake up, they go out and somebody, you know, greets them. Sometimes they are just, their mind is not there and they don't even hear people greeting them. So they, yes, people are moving around with pain. Yeah. So we need to do something about it.
Okay. I guess this isn't a question necessarily, but for me, I just, you know, Naima, echoing like what you were saying, you know, we as a community have been for so long focused on the political arena, right? Like who will be in charge and what will we get? And we have neglected the consequences of that fight, right? To be recognized, to be valued, to be respected, and the emotional turmoil that our families are experiencing. Like, we see the people who are at the front who are fighting, but we don't see the suffering mothers who are behind the scenes, who are, you know, crying for their children to survive and who can't afford to pay for medical expenses or can't afford to even just go to the hospital that's even in their city. I think that our issues are so big. And in the United States, you know, we can say, oh, you know, we have most of our needs met, right? Like, we don't have a fear of political persecution or of dying because we are protesting for our rights. That issue goes out the door. but we're still struggling mentally. We still have to sleep with our suffering minds every single day, having to worry about, like, our families who are back home, are they going to do okay? Are they going to live to see another day? Or matter of fact, like, are my kids who are in the United States, like, are they going to fall victim to the alcohol abuse that is prevalent within adolescence, or the hookah abuse, or the so many things that, you know, we can fall victim to just because of American society and American culture. And I think the lack of awareness, or the lack of calling attention to these struggles and focusing just more on the political arena really does an injustice to us as human beings. Like, what happens when we do get our freedom, or when we do get our birisuma, what happens then? What are we going to do? How do we continue to persevere forward if all we know is how to, you know, how to fight, essentially? Like, what happens when we don't have to fight? But I guess those were my remarks. Are there others who have remarks, comments, questions?
I don't have any more questions. I just thank you for organizing this, and I hope to join others soon.
No, I'm just grateful for this. Thank you so much. And I, nobody that I sent this out to showed up either. So we will make sure to put the word out even more next time. So please keep doing this.
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody who joined, and thank you for inviting me. So yeah, we have to just keep doing this. And we, even though we are safe here, we are suffering inside because half of our body is at home, and we have relatives. And every day when something happens, we just worry about them. So I'm hoping and praying peace will come, and our people will just, you know, this suffering will end soon. You know, I just want to, I hope, and people also who are suffering inside will seek help. Thank you.
Thank you, Zahara. I truly appreciate you taking the time on your Saturday evening to join us on this webinar and discuss this important topic with us. You are truly appreciated. Zahara is not only our webinar host for today, but she also serves on our board of advisors. So she meets with us on a regular basis to give us direction for Opelati. With that being said, this is the end of our meeting. I appreciate those of you who have joined us today. We have monthly webinars, and if you are interested in leading a webinar on whatever topic, it could continue to be on mental health, or more specifically on trauma, or anything that you are particularly interested in and you want to lead a webinar, please let us know. We are open to it. You know, as a Opelati, we realize there aren't that many avenues for us to educate each other about the issues that are prevalent within our community. And so we created this platform to educate each other on the things that are important to our society, especially relating to Oromo women. Just realizing that we don't get a lot of the resources that are available out there. So knowledge is essential. So if you're interested, please feel free to reach out to me or contact Opelati through our various social media avenues that are available. Again, thank you all so much for joining us, and we will see you on our next webinar. Thank you for joining us on our monthly podcast. If you're interested in learning more about this topic or are interested in leading a conversation, please contact us on our social media outlets. Our handles are @Opelati on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat.
You can also contact us via our email or our website, which is opalati.org. Again, thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you on our next podcast.